Hey everyone, welcome back to the Enduring Churches podcast. Trent and Alan here with you, sharing things that we've learned over the years and new things that we're learning. And so we wanted to talk again. We've done some episodes in the past about how to call a pastor, and we kind of wanted to go through that again. We're always trying to keep it update and keep it in front of you if you have questions about this. I know that Alan, in his network of churches that he deals with, and my network of churches, we have always churches that are looking for pastors. And so there are healthy ways to do this and unhealthy ways to do this, Alan. So let's talk a little bit about how to call a pastor.
Yeah, Trent, can you believe that it was all the way back 249 episodes ago that we talked about how to call a pastor for the first time? A lot's happened since then. We had this little event kind of affected the world called COVID. And of course,
yeah,
the eclipse that changed the entire world yesterday. And,
yeah,
you know, you woke up today and nothing's the same, right? So,
uh-huh.
Yeah. But anyway, we've got kind of an update on this, because I don't know that maybe so much has changed on the how-to, but I think there's just a chance to maybe refresh this and kind of maybe update it, talk about it in a different way. We've certainly been doing this longer, and we're in roles now where before we were pastors who were thinking about this. Now we've actually walked with a lot of churches through this. So this isn't a complete how-to, but we're certainly going to make an appeal to you to get a lot more how-to in your process with that. So having said that, Trent, we're going to go. The last time we did this, it turned into two parts because it just got so long that we had to divide it up. And so what we're going to do, we're going to talk for a little while. And if we don't make it through, we're just going to stop and pick it up and turn this into a two-parter as well. But maybe we'll get it all done in one. So let's just see where we go, Trent. So anyway, one of the things we want to do is we want to address on the very front side of this, the role that a pastor has, the obligation you have. If you're leaving your church and it's a healthy situation for your leaving, you have an obligation to help them be prepared for their time of transition. And I really believe that that's true. What do you think about that, Trent?
Yeah, you know, there's, if it is a healthy situation, which you pray that all of the churches, you know, Alan and I both, as we've pastored and then gone to different places of ministry, our goal is always to leave our church in a healthier setup and a stronger situation than they were that we received them. And so I hope that that is your goal as well. And so if you're a pastor who is retiring, say, then there are some things that you need to do to make sure that you're leaving your church situation in a good succession stance to be able to have someone come in, because you want the next guy to do well. You don't ever want the next pastor to come in and fail. You want them to do well. So there are some things that I think that you should do to be able to set this up, Alan.
Yeah, that's right. So the first thing you need to do is double check your bylaws. Are they up to date? Are they clear? Are they workable? Because you have a legal obligation. Your church has a legal obligation to follow the bylaws. And so if you have a laid out process in your bylaws, then you've got to follow that. Now, if it's covered in a policy handbook or something, that can be adapted a whole lot more easily. But most churches have the process for calling a pastor in their bylaws. And so what do your bylaws say? Who's responsible? Do you select a team from the church at large? Do the deacons fill that role? Is there a standing personnel team that covers that? Who is going to be doing your search? Is that clear? And do they have that? So that's one really important element. The second important element that, you know, we didn't mention last time, but I believe is really important this time, is if you're a pastor and you're going out, make sure that your church and your search team have an external contact so they can get the help and the training they need to do their job. And I believe this external contact is one of the most important things that you can do for your church search team.
Yeah, you know, think about this, Alan. If you don't want them contacting you, because that puts you in a kind of a position that can be awkward. But you want them to be able to have feel secure enough to have all the resources they can to be able to do this in a healthy way. Remember, we started out today saying that there are healthy ways and there are unhealthy ways. And you want to have all the tools that they need to do this in a healthy way. And so Alan and I both serve in those kinds of roles to, you know, be that external contact, to be able to go in with a search committee and show them, okay, here are some step-by-step things that you can do to be do this in a healthy way.
Yeah, and we want to encourage you, get that external help. Most people on your search team have never been a part of a search team. They've never been trained to be part of a search team. And if they've been on a search team, the odds are they don't want to be on one again. And it's something that I hear over and over again from people. Well, I didn't want to be on it this time, but I got voted in. And, you know, people need to understand the role that they're in. And the frustrating thing is people feel bad when they're on that role. And then 3 years later, you're searching again. Mm-hmm. So, you know, recognize what's going on. So if you're going out and you're taking another church, you're retiring, it's a pretty healthy transition or whatever, just make sure, pastors, that you know this stuff and that you are able to help the church out. So you say, well, why do I need to know this? I'm the pastor. Because you need to know the process. You need to know how this takes place and what happens. So let's just say, Trent, we've got a team. We followed our bylaws. Our pastor's gone. And we are now putting together this search team. And this search team kind of comes in and they're trying to figure out what the next thing they need to do is. So what's next in all of this? And I want to say the first thing that a search team needs to come together to do is they need to already begin to move past what is human nature. Human nature is we've got to get someone in here. We can't go very long. We just got to go get this done, instead of taking the time and really settling down and recognizing that this is going to be a process.
Well, especially for our smaller churches, they begin to feel like that they've got to take the first person with a pulse that's interested. And that's not a good situation either. What you said about taking the time to do it well. And, you know, Alan, what would you say would be the amount of time that a church, no matter what size, should expect to take in this process minimum? I mean, I know you can't say for sure.
I'd say in the best of circumstances, this is, you know, let's say you've had a pastor for 5 years and he left on good terms. No one was mad. There were no problems. He'd been there 5 years and he left. I'd say you're at least 6 months before you get a new pastor in there.
Yeah.
And that's the good side. That's probably the quickest you're going to make it happen.
Yeah, I would agree. Because it used to be, man, if a church has gone 6 months or a year, there must be some issues. But now that's really the median value. I mean, I haven't seen anybody recently receive a pastor or find a pastor less than 6 months.
The exception might be where there was a good transition plan in place. Mm-hmm. Where things were kind of already laid out and people kind of knew what was happening, but those are the exception and not the rule. Transition's a whole different type of subject. If you've got someone in your midst that you're trying to maybe groom or prepare to take over that role, but we're talking, you know, in this case about churches where the pulpit's vacant and you don't know where you're going to turn. And the crazy thing is, Trent, that the larger the church, the longer it's going to take. Mm-hmm. So the larger the church, it's just harder to find someone who meets all the criteria that you feel like you're looking for. And mega churches, if I remember right, it's over 3 years, the average tenure that they go without pastors. So, you know, if your church is over 2,000 in attendance, you won't be surprised if, you know, you're reaching out to a local seminary and you're getting two or three long-term interims to guide you through this time of this process as you search and as you try to find candidates who are even capable of leading your church. So there's a lot of challenges out there today.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that, those long-term interims. And so part of your role as a search committee, it may be, depending on how your bylaws are set up, it may be that your part of your role is setting up those people to fill the pulpit during that time while you're in the search. And that can be frustrating. So I would find that external contact. Maybe they have a pulpit supply list, which in our network, we provide for all of our churches. You know, here are some gentlemen that are we've vetted and they do a good job, so that you can have them and schedule them while you're doing the search. But so in our notes here, sorry, Alan, I kind of chased a rabbit there. But, you know, it is human nature to think about, okay, the pastors in our past did this. Some of them did good. Some of them were not so good. And the tendency is to swing from one extreme to the other on what they didn't do. So I guess it's a healthier way to go and look at your church first rather than look at the pastors in the past.
Yeah, and I think the point when you look at your church and then you look at your pastor, I think what you'll find, Trent, is that in most of these cases, you know, we had a pastor who was really good with pastoral care. He cared for us. He loved us. He did all of this. He was an okay preacher. He wasn't a very good administrator or this or that, but he loved us. Well, the last thing you need to just go, well, we don't need someone to love on us. We need a good preacher to fill that pulpit. And so a church goes out and gets that preacher, and then the people don't get cared for at a level. And so all the people who were, well, he doesn't even like us, you know. And so he stays 3 or 4 years. Thank goodness he's gone. And you go out and you go get a pastoral care guy again. And then you're, well, but he can't preach. You know? Yeah. What is it that your pastor did well that really brought your church together? And recognize that that's something you want to build on. And that might be the trait that you really want to double down on, not the one that you want to get rid of. And so, you know, just start thinking about what is it that's really important in this process. And sadly, Trent, as you and I know, and as we have seen, most churches put the whole onus of do we want this guy or not based upon they hear one sermon from someone and make a decision about everything based on that one sermon.
Yeah, that's a horrible situation because you don't know enough about that person based on one sermon, because that could be their sugar stick, right? The sermon they preached again and again, and that one is the one they knock out of the park and they feel good about. But you kind of, if at the very least, if you're going to look at preaching, you've got to look at several sermons. You need to, if they do a series, you know, listen to those. But there's so much more. And we have a list here of 4 things: is character, leadership, theology, and family. And I think I would add a 5th one that kind of goes with these, is the emotional intelligence, that how well do they do with people? All these things, that character, oh my goodness, I'm glad Alan's got that as our number one thing. Yeah, you want a person of character. And so you've got to do a lot of digging in their references to know about
them. Yeah, they're the right leader, because the right leader matters. You know, they say the most expensive hire is the wrong hire. So, you know, are they the right leader for your church? Do they display the characters of a leader? There's someone that you're going to be willing to follow. You know, their theology, is it right? Does it agree with who you are as a church? You know, if you're a diehard Methodist church, you may not want a Baptist pastor. If you're a Baptist church, you may not want a Methodist pastor. So, you know, do you match up theologically? You know, is the family a good fit? Trent, you and I both told stories and seen stories where a church calls someone and they recognize that they're 40 miles away from the nearest Walmart and they grew up in the city and this might not be a good fit. The wife's staying out in the car crying. You know, right. it doesn't work in those ways. And of course, how do you get along with people? How well attuned are you with yourself and with others? All of those things kind of come in. And really what happens, and what I tell churches, Trent, is preaching should be the last thing you determine if you like about a candidate. So if you get down to three or four candidates, that's the time to go listen to a sermon. You should never listen to a sermon until you've nailed it down to three or four candidates. And I'll stand on that one.
Yeah, I like what you said about the family. A lot of times we spend so much time looking at the individual and not knowing more about their family situation, especially if you're in a rural situation where the school is the center of life in a town, and you bring in a family that is, they don't deal well with people, or they're very closed off, or they're, you know, and I'm not against homeschooling, but there are some situations where it makes it so hard if the family is all about homeschool and they don't talk to anybody else, when everybody's life centers around the school. And that can be hard on both sides. And you're setting yourself up for conflict when you don't have to have that.
Yeah, and then it's vice versa too, right? If you've got in a church and most of the people in your church are homeschoolers, but you're trying to build all these bridges sometimes into maybe a local school or something, and it seems like you kind of can sometimes do this. So make sure that you know, all those things are good fits. So Trent, the next thing we just say is to use a well-established process. And there are processes out there. Every denomination that calls pastors has some kind of process out there. Now, you have to weed through them, because I have read a lot of processes from our particular denomination, and most of them I'm not completely satisfied with. And I know I'm going to have to write my own someday. But you know, find one that is good, that is healthy, that others speak well of. But I think even more important, get someone to walk with you through this process.
Yeah, that is that external contact person, just as we were mentioning. Alan and I have served in those roles for churches. And just to have somebody with outside eyes to get you to think about some things that maybe you haven't. And as Alan said earlier, as we started today, most of your people have not been through a search process, and so you need somebody to walk you step by step through this. And some of the first things is, you know, as you're looking at your church, you develop a very clear job description. As you look at your bylaws and your constitution, that may give you a basis, but maybe you need to rethink it a little bit. And work out that job description.
Yeah, because if you have multiple staff, it's different than a church that has one staff. If you have a church where you have a lot of younger families, the expectations of pastoral care are going to look different than if you have a congregation that's primarily senior adults. So all these things are very important. So is there a clear job description? Is there a clear budget? Do you know what you can afford to pay a pastor? One of the things, you know, I get resumes all the time from guys, and some of them will say, look, I can't afford to make, I've got three kids and I've got to make at least X amount. Well, that rules out, you know, 70% of my churches. So if one of the 30% comes available, I can certainly turn their name in, but it doesn't waste a smaller church's time with a smaller budget and doesn't match those things up. So what's the best your church can do? I think that's part of what you're putting in a salary package for a pastor, but do you have a clear budget for that? And can you give them a copy of your budget so they can see how the finances in your church are? And so those are two points of big clarity. And then, Trent, we go back to what we were talking about earlier, that clear list of qualities. These are the non-negotiables. These are the things that we have to have in a pastor. Like, they should be a believer, right? I mean, they should be people of the faith. That should be on your list, though. Can you give us your testimony? Can you tell us how you know what you are? That should be one of the first questions you ask.
Well, and the other side of that is, if you're a person looking to pastor a church, there you should have your own list of non-negotiables. You know, as you talk to a church, you should be able to say, hey, these are things that I expect of a church biblically. And these is the role of pastor. This is the way that I function. And so you have a conversation about those things so that everybody understands before you call that person how things are going to work.
So Trent, the next thing we just want to say is in your process, you got to know where you're going to go look for candidates, because it's not as easy today as it once was. Sure. Maybe you can do that through a local network or association like we have, through your denomination. I know people use our denominational headquarters at our state level and our national level are probably our two most prominent. But in this day and age, you're going to get more and more people from out of state who apply for your position. And so is that something that you can consider? Can you help move someone in? But know where you're going to get those resumes.
Well, and you mentioned move someone in. That makes me think, too, that as part of your qualities or the things that you're going to offer related to budget, does your church have a parsonage? A lot of people said back in the 80s and 90s, oh, churches should get rid of their parsonages. I think that that was a mistake. I think that was a huge mistake. There are some situations in a larger church where a pastor is going to be paid in such a way that he can go buy his own house. But when you're talking about a bivocational situation in a smaller area, a parsonage may be an important help in those situations. So it just made me think of that, Alan. You need to be able to communicate that.
Yes. So you want to kind of work with that process. What's that going to look like? And I always encourage churches too, when you start receiving resumes, just send everyone an acknowledgement. We've received your resume. Thank you for your interest in our position. If we desire to talk with you any further, we will reach out to you. So you've not obligated yourself that you are going to go any further with them, but you're also acknowledging that you've received their resume. So you've made a good first contact. You've opened a door if you want the door to open, but you've also closed a door if you want to close the door. And I think that that's a really important step in this process. And if you'll do that as you get those, whoever's collecting those, there should be one person who collects all the resumes, and that will make that easier on you. And Trent, there's another tip about the resumes in here. It can be really frustrating when a search team, they've got four different, each of them have received four different resumes. They've all read a resume and they've all fallen in love with someone already. And then they've got to come back and meet together. I've seen that happen so many times. It frustrates me every time. I think that when you get resumes, you should have a specific day where you're going to start looking at resumes together.
Right. You don't want to have what we call a dog and pony show, resumes or inviting people in. A mistake that I've seen, Alan, is churches, they'll bring in several guys. They'll say, well, for the next month, we're going to have a different guy preach. And boy, talk about blow up your church. That will blow up your church, because some people will like the first guy. Some people will like the second guy. And, you know, so you're messing with things that you cannot put back together. So, you know, as Alan said, wait, set a cutoff date for when you're going to stop receiving resumes. Then go through what you've received. If there's nothing in there that you like, then say we're going to extend that. But do that all together as a committee. I like that, Alan, what you said.
Yeah, and the parade of preachers thing, that's got to be, in our role, Trent, that's probably the thing that frustrates us most when we see churches do that, because we so advise them not to do that. But it causes more problems than just about anything else a church does in this process. Anyway, there's my dog telling us he doesn't like it either. So, well, Trent, talk about barking dogs. Let's talk about communication here. One of the things that a church search team needs to do is they need to communicate with the church often, don't they?
Yeah, and this is hard because typically a lot of people are asking the search committee, what are you doing? Have you got a guy for us yet? And, you know, so they're asking things, and the search committee is limited on what you can share. But you should be sharing. You should be telling your people, asking them to pray for the search committee continually, telling them, hey, right now we're in the process of receiving resumes. You don't have to say anything more than that. And then just give them little bits, but you don't want to share with them, hey, we're looking at so-and-so. because then you're going to have people post that on Facebook and talk about mess up a guy's ministry. That can really hurt you.
Yeah, so there's a lot of things you have to consider in this. I strongly encourage churches, bring your search team up at the end of a service, at the beginning of a service, sometime, pray for them. Pray for them as a church. Get them in front of you and pray for them. And one of the reasons for that is something that we're seeing today. Organizational distrust is at an all-time high. And one of the trends that's happening today is that people are assuming that if someone's on a search team, that they wormed their way into the search team and that they've got an agenda and that they just want to get their person hired. And so many churches are voting down candidates that search teams bring to them. And a lot of that is because there's just not communication. Communication builds trust. And that's what you want to see. You want to build trust between your church and your search team. And to me, when you're praying together, that's one of the most trustful things that we can do as a church. And so we want to take this to God together. And I believe that this is one of the best pieces of advice that we can give you, is to pray for your search team publicly and regularly.
The next thing that you have on our list, Alan, is to communicate with candidates as needed. And you mentioned sending out a letter when you receive a resume, which I think that's very important because, you know, there's nothing worse. And Alan and I have been on this side where you send a resume and it's like crickets, you know, did you get it? Are you interested? You know, and so communicate, as Alan said, with a brief letter saying we received your resume. We'll get back to you if needed in the future. But in the process, as you go through that and you get down to one person that you want to pursue a little bit further, then be communicating with that person. Let them know that, hey, we've narrowed it down to you at this point. We would like to visit with you further, and give them more information at that point, such as your budget.
Yeah, you want to just communicate. You know, sometimes too, you might even be down to three or four candidates, and you know, maybe someone on your search team gets really sick. Just communicate what's going on. Look, we've run into an issue. One of our members is really sick. He's a key person in the search team. We're going to have to take 2 weeks off. We apologize for that, but this is what we need to do. Just be honest and upfront and communicate with people. That's really important. One of the other things to communicate, Trent, is both written and unwritten expectations. And I think we can all agree that the written expectations are the job description, but there's unwritten expectations too, right?
Oh, yeah. As you think about this, think about the way that churches function on anything. Churches take way longer to do things than businesses do. Churches take way longer to do things than individuals do. And so when you're only able to get a group together once a week and to work for an hour, things are going to take a little bit longer. So you know, communicate those things. And if you're someone looking for a church position, you need to keep that in mind. It's so hard to be patient, but that's the way churches function.
Well, Trent, we mentioned already, don't do the parade of preachers thing. Really focus down until you get one candidate, interview that one candidate, and move forward. And sometimes if it doesn't go well, you're not going to the second best candidate. You're probably going to have to start over. So recognize that and be okay with that process, but also bring them in at the appropriate time. You know, when's the best time? What's the right time? What's the right way? Bring them in. Give them a weekend, you know, bring them in on a Friday, let them meet the leadership team, maybe on a Saturday, see the town, get to know a little bit about the church. And then on Sunday, you're going to introduce this person to your church or something like that. That's a pretty common process. I think it's a successful process and something that tends to work pretty well. So, Trent, one of the things that you have always recommended, and we're going to try to wrap up here fairly quickly, but one of the things you've recommended is you want to keep your search team together beyond the search process and calling a pastor. Why is that?
Well, Alan, I have seen that once a church calls a pastor, the pastor doesn't know who the movers and shakers are, and they don't have a format for people to communicate frustrations. They also don't have a way for the pastor and his family to communicate frustrations. So if the search committee remains a standing committee for the first year, that gives the pastor and his family someone to talk to and ask questions of. It also gives the church someone to talk to and ask questions of and communicate frustrations or excitement, whatever. If they become a mediator for the first year, and that helps everyone to communicate better.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's just a really neat idea. Pastors need to know where things are at. They need some feedback. You know, we talk about the honeymoon period. Everything seems good, but maybe not everything is good. Maybe there's some things that someone's missing along the lines, or maybe there's been some misunderstanding or something like that. But I would also like to say one reason it's good to keep your search team together as well. Everyone on your search team, when you call a pastor, you all have this idea, this picture in mind of what that pastor is going to look like. And some of those things are not going to come to pass because, again, it's our perspective. And keeping that group together can allow them the freedom too, as a team, to say, oh, you thought he was going to do that? No way.
Yeah.
You know, it helps us keep ourselves grounded in the group identity of what we did, not the personal identity of what we did. And I think that can be really helpful for that search team. But it's a huge task. It's a difficult task. And, you know, I would encourage you again, pastors, if you are contemplating retirement, if you're looking at another opportunity, I hope you've listened to this, and I hope you'd be willing to share this with some of your leadership team so that they can use this and bookmark this as a tool to give to their search team.
Yeah. Again, we want you to know that there are healthy ways and unhealthy ways. And so if you're a pastor who's retiring or moving on to a different ministry position, or if you are someone who has recently been elected as part of the search team, we want you to know that there are great ways to do this. And God can, if you'll give him the time to do it, if you'll work with your church and the rest of the committee in a healthy way, God can bring an amazing pastor, and you can have a great experience throughout this, not just a frustrating one.
So anyway, we went a little bit long today, but I think this is an important topic for us to talk about. And so we revisited an old episode to try to give it a fresh take. So there you go, How to Call a Pastor in 2024. And I hope you, again, will save this. Hope you'll pass it along to someone else. But we are so grateful to you. We do this so you and your church can endure. We want to see you last in ministry. And we care about you, and we love you and your church. And we are so grateful you take time to listen to us. And we look forward to catching you on the next episode of the Enduring Churches Podcast.